Welcome to the podcast. It is Friday. We have a great podcast for you tomorrow with Rabbi Daniel Lappin. It's a 90-minute sit-down that, you know, uninterrupted, really fascinating look at socialism, America, capitalism, how we move forward as people. That is on tomorrow. You can check it out wherever you get podcasts or on the Blaze TV.com/Beck.
What promo code should you use?
I would use Beck.
If you're going to sign up?
Yeah, and you're going to save like 10%.
Oh, nice.
You know what's interesting about today's show is that we kind of started where we ended. We started first with Bernie Sanders and socialism and his praise, and we have a few theories on where that's coming from. But then kind of turned to the Declaration of Independence and why that's so important. That's where we ended the show, but we ended it with Jonathan Dunn, Freedom's disciple. He's a guy from Ireland who is so well-spoken on why we're exceptional. Not great, why we're exceptional.
He's great. And in between those, we had Bill O'Reilly and Bernie Sanders on.
This is a podcast you don't want to miss.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck program.
So, you know, you got the really exciting, the dynamic, I would call him a dynamo myself, Bernie Sanders, now running for president. And there seems to be a lot of...
Want to maybe stop and say that he's going to be on the show today? This would be a good time.
You're right. When you're right, you're right. Bernie Sanders is going to be joining us on the show. Is that hour number three?
Yes.
Yeah, top of the hour of hour number three of today's broadcast. Wanted to talk to him for a long time. Would never come on. I seriously would like to talk to him because I have respect that he is open and honest about what he says. I mean, what he believes.
There was an incident on the socials last night, Glenn, where Alyssa Milano.
Oh, my gosh.
Noted brainiac and genius.
Yes.
Alyssa Milano.
Yes.
Pointed out that democratic socialism isn't real. Just a trick by Republicans to scare you into not voting for Democrats because you're going to think they're socialists. Now, the people who have identified themselves as Democratic Socialists, I'm not exactly sure what they say about that.
They don't exist.
So it's like someone calling
Muppets.
Themselves a unicorn.
Yes. Muppets and maybe CGI. I'm not sure. They're deep fakes.
Oh, okay.
For sure, we know that. They might be Muppets.
You could convince me that Bernie Sanders is just an automatron.
No, you could convince me that he is the Muppet up in the balcony.
Oh yeah. Except he wouldn't. Isn't that too elitist for him?
Yeah, he wouldn't be. He would be down with the people.
We shouldn't sell these tickets to other people. I will hold on to this lakefront property or balcony for now until socialism fully kicks in.
Until we can all share in the wealth.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So here is the conundrum that I face today. All of this stuff is coming out negative about Bernie Sanders.
Hmm.
And I think Republicans are pretty thrilled that Bernie Sanders is running yet again. I think this is a very exciting thing to see that Bernie Sanders is going to be, has even the possibility of being the top of the ticket. So what?
I mean, he's probably the front runner right now.
Right. Well, he is fundraising and things like that.
Polling.
He is. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So there's no reason for anybody to torpedo him. You should celebrate him. But yet there are all these leaks of all this old news that's coming out. And I'm wondering who would release that? Who would have the motivation to go and do all the wet works now on Bernie Sanders? This is the latest. Here is Bernie Sanders in 1986.
For some reason or other, being very excited when Fidel Castro made the revolution in Cuba. I was a kid and I remember reading that. And it was just seemed right and appropriate that poor people were rising up against rather ugly rich people. And I remember, again, very distinctly, a very distinct feeling. I was watching the debates. You remember the famous Nixon-Kennedy debates? That was the first time the presidential candidates actually debated. And I was becoming increasingly interested in politics, didn't know much, but was interested. I remember sitting in the student lounge at our dormitory watching the debate. And at that time, well, I can talk about Cuba now, I was very excited and impressed by the Cuban Revolution.
Even the Democrats weren't excited by the Cuban Revolution. Now here he is in 1988. He was impressed by the revolution, that the poor people would rise up and get rid of the ugly rich guys. And now in 1988, he sees the fruit of the revolution of 1919 in the Soviet Union.
Most of the people here also were extremely impressed by their public transportation system. The stations themselves were absolutely beautiful, including many works of art, chandeliers that were beautiful. It was a very, very effective system. Also, I was impressed by the youth programs that they have, their palaces of culture for the young people, a whole variety of young of programs for young people, and cultural programs which go far beyond what we do in this country. We went to a theater in Yaroslavl, which was absolutely beautiful, had three separate stages. Ooh. Where cultural programs are put on by professional actors and actresses, including a puppeteer area. And the cost, the highest price of a ticket that you can get, was the equivalent of $1.50.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, wow.
Wouldn't that be wonderful? Now, the gulags and the torture and the cries of the oppressed, and, you know, the millions that were killed. But have you seen the chandelier?
Mm.
I mean, I hate rich people and their opulence, but as long as the people have a chandelier in their subway system, and it was beautiful, it was gorgeous, you didn't see it.
I didn't. I mean, there's a cost-benefit analysis to everything. And,
yeah.
I mean, for me, a chandelier at a train station worth about 400,000 or 500,000 dead. If I can get it one chandelier per 400,000 I've starved to death in the fields or executed as they tried to get potatoes, I think that's about the right ratio.
Well,
some people might say it's a little lower and a little higher. That's the debate.
Right. I would like to have more than one chandelier, and I also want these great youth programs, because
oh, yeah.
I was very impressed with their youth programs. You know, when they're turning their parents into the KGB.
That's one of the youth programs.
That's
sure.
one of the youth yep. programs. Mm-hmm. I love that.
I love that too.
I love that.
And to me, a good youth program, you're talking 1.2, 1.3 million dead. I'd trade, you know, let's say it's after school basketball. That's about 1.6 million for me.
If you get a theater with three stages and a puppet theater,
I might go to 2 million dead for that.
Really?
Yeah, I think that's about
And the chandeliers?
Well, if you put the chandelier
you're
in the building, I'm at 2.5.
Yeah, 2.5.
I'm
okay.
at 2.5.
Well, we could debate on 2, 2.5, 3.
Right.
You know, how many million have to die. But I was impressed by this. This guy is a nightmare. This guy's a nightmare.
He's terrifying as a president of the United States.
I have to tell you, I don't know. Woodrow Wilson, here's what happened. Woodrow Wilson was that kind of guy. He was that kind of guy. He was the kind of guy who was like, yeah, well, you know, if you're going to have to kill a few people, you're going to have to kill a few people. We have to put a few people behind bars. We have to do it because it's the right thing for the state.
For the collective.
Yeah, for the collective. And so that scared the American people so much that they backed away, and we got the Roaring Twenties. We went with Harding and then Coolidge, and we got the Roaring Twenties. So they had to soften everything after that, and we didn't have any kind of reemergence of the progressive until the Great Depression. So I've been waiting to see what our bottom is, and I don't think we're going to hit our bottom. I really don't. Our bottom has not come yet. There's not enough pain for the American people. It's the line in the Declaration of Independence, and I can't remember it. Look up the Declaration of Independence for me real quick. But there's a line in it that says, basically, people will suffer all kinds of oppression. They'll just keep going, because they would rather have the known than the possible pain of a switch of the unknown. And so they just get worse and worse and worse and worse. But then there comes a point to where they're like, okay, I've had enough. And they rise up. Do you realize how fast this is going to happen if we allow it to happen? It could happen in 2020 that they completely redesigned this country and flip the entire Constitution upside down, that we lose the free market system. Now, as long as we don't lose the vote, as long as we don't lose true representation, which is always the first thing that people do, as long as we don't lose that, we might be able to turn it back around and set it right. Might. We did it before under Wilson. We might be able to do it. The difference between Wilson and today is infrastructure. Wilson didn't have the universities. He didn't have the media. He didn't have the government infrastructure. He didn't have Department of Homeland Security and all of these things. They had to do it from the outside. And that's why it was easily shut down in the next election. I don't think it goes back. I don't think it goes back. I think once you flip this system upside down, it calcifies because there's so many employees now. And in one term, the federal government would grow to an exponential rate.
Yeah. I mean, and think about Bernie Sanders. Let's say he wins the nomination, which is it's a possibility. I still don't find it to be the most likely possibility, but he's the current front runner.
Yeah, but he's going to they'll count him out just because of the Democrats will destroy him.
And remember, too, Sanders is a little bit different than some of the other candidates who believe in socialism in that he is an ideologue, not a politician. Number one. And number two, he's 493 years old and has nothing to lose. He's not the type of guy who's playing for the future here of his political life. He's playing for the future of I want socialism in this country.
He's a disruptor.
Right. So
he's a disruptor.
He comes in, wins that nomination. In that scenario, if he actually wins the presidency, they absolutely are holding onto the House and they're definitely taking the Senate. Can they get to 60 votes in the Senate? Probably not. However, as we've seen over the last two cycles here, each side has taken another thing that used to have to be 60 votes and changed it into 50. Mm-hmm. You've seen the Democrats did it with judges. Republicans did it with Supreme Court this time. And Donald Trump has said many times that he thinks the filibuster should go away so he can get things done. The fact that Trump has said that, you're telling me Sanders isn't going to get in there and make that same argument? And if they can get that through, then they'll pass all of this crap.
Listen, this is why this is happening to the Democrats. Why has the socialism train all of a sudden just picked up? It's like, you know, in Back to the Future 2, is that the one where it's the Wild West?
That's 3, isn't it?
That's 3. Mm-hmm. Okay, so, and remember they throw those logs into the train and they throw that last bundle and that's what gets it up to 88 miles an hour?
Yes.
It's as if the Democrats or the Democratic Socialists have thrown that last bundle in and all of a sudden we are hyperspeed to the cliff.
Mm-hmm.
Does it not feel that way?
Mm-hmm.
Why did that happen? What caused that?
The best of the Glenn Beck program.
Bill O'Reilly from BillO'Reilly.com. Bill, you are I have so much I want to talk to you about. You're gonna have insight that we have maybe missed this week. But I want to start with dessert. I want to start with this crazy story out of Chicago and Jussie Smollett.
Well, it is a crazy story, and you know he's doubling down by telling the Hollywood pinheads, "Oh, I didn't do it." You know, this is.
If
it's not true. I mean, the Chicago police are lying about me. So that tells me the guy is mentally ill. Is that fair?
Does seem to be relatively fair.
I'm not saying it as a joke.
No, I think that might be fair.
I think it might be a cop-out. You have evidence now.
Yes.
Compiled by the Chicago police, which treated him with respect in the beginning. And the guy's still claiming that, you know, two white guys jumped him at 2:30 in the morning in 14 below zero weather when he came back from his subway.
But he's doubling down even more than that. His lawyer came out yesterday and said, this is what we thought we were dealing with was bad enough. But now look at the justice system.
He's being persecuted by the authorities.
Oh, my gosh.
So I think that at this point you have to disengage, and this is a lesson for people in their personal lives as well. Once you get into a point where it's irrational and that truth and facts don't matter anymore, so you're in a delusionary world, you got to get away. Okay, so I'm putting that story behind me, and I feel bad for any human being that self-destructs that way. But the political story here, Kamala Harris and Cory Booker, two senators, in my opinion, have destroyed their credibility forever.
So cast members, cast members of Empire have come out and said, this is horrible. They are destroying him. Fox has distanced themselves, and not Fox News Channel. Fox has distanced themselves. And yet the presidential candidates don't?
Well, they do, but they don't know what to do, because both Booker and Harris on their resume have the witch hunting against Brett Kavanaugh. So this is two. All right. So they're witch hunters. That's who these people are. And I'll submit to you that no American is going to vote for a, well, I shouldn't even say that because we live in a different country now. But they're witch hunters. And Harris had a pretty good shot at the number two spot on a Biden ticket. But now, if Biden puts her there, all you're going to hear about is Jussie Smollett. That's all you're going to hear about. I mean, Trump will go to town on that, and so will Pence like crazy. So that's a big unintended consequence of this whole thing that the media will never report. The second big story off this is that many millions of Americans now believe CNN is trash. You had their media critic, the bald guy, what's his name? That vicious animal there.
Stelter?
Brian.
Sources.
I think Brian, Stelter. Brian Stelter, potentially?
All right, Stelter, yeah. Vicious beyond belief, this man. Okay? And Lara Logan pointed that out this week. He comes out and he says, on the air, mainstream media covered Smollett responsibly. That's the end of him.
Yeah, delusional. Delusional.
Right. So I looked at the numbers. I just got them from last night for CNN cable news.
Mm-hmm.
They are now evaporating.
What are their nightly numbers like?
They have declined in the last few weeks about 20-25%.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
How many?
Because the MSNBC, what they did was they just ignored it, if you can believe it. They were all over Smollett when it first started. Oh, this is terrible. And then the usual virtue signaling that they do. We're noble and the country is terrible. But we, MSNBC, we are so noble and so smart. And then when it turned, what MSNBC did, and this is all corporate, we've discussed this before, they're ordered what to do and say, was they didn't cover it. They ignored it. Even their big show, Maddow. Okay? But CNN tried to defend it. You see the difference?
Mm-hmm.
So the liberals who don't want to see this any or hear this anymore, they went to MSNBC because even they couldn't stomach the lies coming out of CNN. I mean, so you got two really big stories off Smollett. You've got the disintegration of two presidential candidates and the disintegration of CNN. Now, how long people remember, I don't know, but it can be brought up at any time.
Well, may I have one more big story. I agree with everything you just said. One other story that is big and yet undeveloped, and that is, how much time will he get for this? Now he's accused of sending his own letter to himself, a threatening letter to himself.
Probation and a fine.
That's a mistake. Wait a minute. Hang on. If you did that, the penalty is 7 to 10 years for just postal fraud.
Go back.
I know. Hang on just a second. 1 to 3 for the reporting of a crime. If this guy, he is facing, from basic sentencing, 8 to 13 years.
Beck,
I understand.
This is a city where you can carry a gun, be a gang member, and they won't even give you any jail time.
So here's the undeveloped story yet to come, and is, if this guy, we have 30 on the Blaze today, we have added last weekend, a reporter went through and they found like 20 different stories that were fake. Today, the Blaze has a comprehensive story on 30 of these fake left wing, I was victimized somehow or another by Donald Trump supporter. If you don't make an example out of this guy, There is no truth on the local level. Police won't be able to believe anything.
They're not going to do it, Beck. I'm telling you, this is Cook County, Chicago.
I know. So
what's going to happen is the lawyers for Smollett will go in and say our client has psychological and emotional problems. We want to make a plea deal. Don't put him in jail. He'll get therapy. Give him probation. He'll pay a fine for all the expenses that the Chicago PD put out, and that's what will happen.
We're with Bill O'Reilly on the Glenn Beck Program. It is Friday. We're talking about the loss of Amazon to New York and what that means politically. AOC and others are celebrating. The New York Times had a deal on their daily podcast today about what it means for New York, and they were so arrogant, saying, well, New York doesn't really need Amazon, and we'll get those jobs anyway. Quote, we create in New York City thousands of jobs every month anyway. Oh, do you? Really? But what do the real people think on the streets? And, you know, from Bill O'Reilly's house, there is a vantage point to where you can look down at the little villages and towns where real people actually live. How are the average Democrats looking at, you know, job creation? This isn't job creation. These are serial killers when it comes to job creation. 25,000 jobs lost.
Okay. Number one, I'm glad you follow the New York Times because I don't.
Yes.
You
Somebody
know why
has to.
I don't?
Because everything.
Because they're liars.
Okay, got it.
All right. And they lied today, if what you're reporting is accurate.
It is.
I have no reason to believe it is. So little Andrew Cuomo, the governor of New York State, and I use the word little because he's shrinking in my estimation almost every day. Mm-hmm. Little Andrew Cuomo comes out 2 weeks ago and says, we are $2.5 billion light on tax receipts. So we expected $2.5 billion more taxes in New York State. And the reason we don't have them is because large wage earners like Glenn Beck, and he cited you specifically.
I'm sure he did.
Have moved out of the state, mm-hmm. which you did. Mm-hmm. No, you're in Connecticut, but have moved out. Okay. So that's a fact in stone. So then the New York Times comes in and says, oh, no, we don't need Amazon. We create jobs all the time. Then they're, of course, contradicting little Andrew.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So you can't believe a word those people say. Nothing. Now, your question before the break was, are the folks who elected Ocasio-Cortez going to wise up and see what she's peddling is hurtful to them and the country?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure. And I'll tell you, I don't know if the news penetrates now through to 75% of the American people.
Well, hang on.
25% of us follow it. But 75% of us are so addicted to the machines and everything else that they don't.
So let me give you a prime example of this. Here's Ocasio-Cortez trying to explain how taxes work to a show that, you know, will appeal to 75% of Americans. Watch.
All right, enough about that. Why are you trying to take all our money away from us? We just signed a Showtime, and now you're trying to put the wild tax on billionaires. What's wrong with you?
No, seriously though. Please look straight to camera and explain the tax for the dumb mother that keeps saying, if I make $1 million, she's going to take $70 million away from me.
So a marginal tax rate is saying if you make more than $10 million in 1 year, mm-hmm. which is a pretty good year.
That's a damn good year.
If you make
that's some El Chapo.
$10 million. Yes, seriously. If you make more than $10 million in 1 year, your 10 millionth and $1 gets taxed at 70%. Which, by the way, We used to have marginal tax rates under Republican presidents of 90%. And it was when we experienced some of the largest rates of economic.
Bow! Stupid, hold that. So. You know what's crazy? Like, she totally explained it, and I don't have $10 million, but even though I'm just like, nah.
And it really comes down to the question of, isn't $10 million enough? Like, when does it stop?
Yeah, when it's too much.
Right?
Too much.
Like, when, at what point is it immoral that we're building Jeff Bezos a helipad when we have the most amount of homeless people in New York City?
Listen,
all right, there it is. So this is the Bodega Boys. That's how people get their news.
Well, that was Jake Tapper interviewing her. I mean, how much is that? You like I think. Okay, so what you have now is somebody who really wants to be a Kardashian. All right. So she doesn't understand macroeconomics. She doesn't understand that anybody making $10 million is already paying 50% of that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Not on a corporate level. Okay? Now, at a corporate level, I think the government should go in there, and I don't think Amazon should be paying no taxes, which they did last year.
Right.
Nothing. I don't think so.
I
think
either.
That's wrong. Okay? And I'm with Ms. Cortez on that. But for me, when I earn money at the, you know, I pay half in state and federal taxes. And that's not enough for this woman? I'm sorry, achievement should be celebrated, not punished.
All right, Bill, let me switch subjects here in the last few minutes. The Mueller investigation is supposed to be finished next week. A, true or false? B, what happens? What are we going to see?
CNN reported that. I don't trust anything CNN says, but I think the indications are that the new attorney general made a call to Mueller and said, when are you going to have it? I think that's what happened, and I have that on fairly reliable information, as Stu always knows.
Of course.
So Barr got in. The first call was to Mueller. When are you going to have it? And then it leaked out. Okay, so I'm going to go with it that Mueller will put out something, but it's not going to be public. It'll go to Barr. And then Barr will brief congressional people. As soon as he does that, it'll leak out.
And that's true. The way that this works, Bill, is that it basically falls onto Barr to do a summary of the Mueller report. Is that right?
Yep. And then Barr didn't have to make that public. He didn't have to put it out to the folks. And I don't believe there's going to be anybody in Barr's office going to put it out.
He does have to brief Congress, though,
because
right?
They're so scared now at the Department of Justice that they're not going to do that. But as soon as he goes over to the Hill and it gets into the committees and says, this is what it says, 2 seconds later. But you're not going to get an accurate appraisal of it. So Schiff and those guys, they're going to spin it negative no matter what it is. And then the Republicans, even if it was terrible, they'd say it isn't terrible. So the folks will not get a real accurate barometer. And then, of course, the news agencies won't report it accurately. They have too much invested in it.
So what comes out of this in the end, Bill, what does this mean for the...
Unless there is a charge leveled against Donald Trump, it means nothing.
I mean, what if it's one of the kids? Donald Trump Jr.,
it's
Jared
not
Kushner.
Going to be one of the kids. It's not going to be anything like that. And if it were, it would have already leaked out.
Mm-hmm.
Here's what it's going to be. And you guys have this on tape and you can play it back. It's going to be Donald Trump did not understand that his organization was violating the spirit of our elections by interacting with Russian agents, bad actors, they're going to use that word, during the campaign. And the Russians tried to subvert our election, but the Trump campaign was so naive and so distracted and so incompetent that it played into their hands, the Russians' hands. That's what it's going to be.
And is it true, Bill, that because what we're going to get, essentially, if I'm reading this right, is we're going to get Barr's report, a Trump appointee's report about what the Mueller report says.
No, you'll get the Mueller report some down the road.
Right.
So Barr can't distort it. He can't.
So, but that's going to come from what?
He briefs can distort it and will, and the press, of course, will never report accurately because they can't.
So
they've
have
already
to
convicted Trump of Russian collusion.
So they have
they
to
can't report it accurately. And then the people who are invested in Trump, who have defended him, can't certainly say, he did something wrong. They can't do that. Everybody's got to stay where they are. It's like Jesse Smollett.
Yeah, you just keep going.
He can't admit it.
Will this have to be subpoenaed to get the actual full report down the line?
They'll put it out. They
will.
Yeah. I mean, you can't pay all this money. The taxpayers paid $30 million. I mean, you can't say we're not going to show it to you. But it'll be redacted. It's like Glenn Beck's life. You have to redact half of it.
Yeah, a lot of it's ugly. Right? A lot of it's ugly.
I don't know if I don't know if I'd go there in that challenge with me there, Bill. But thank you so much, Bill O'Reilly. BillO'Reilly.com.
BillO'Reilly.com.
Good to talk to you. Talk to you again next week.
Okay.
God bless. BillO'Reilly.com.
Sign up.
Yep.
This is the best of the Glenn Beck program. Like listening to this podcast? If you're not a subscriber, become one now on iTunes. And while you're there, do us a favor and rate the show.
If you haven't listened to my podcast that happens once a week, you really need to. They are really, really good. It's sometimes a 90-minute conversation with deep, deep thinkers, people that are in the news, and then people like Rabbi Lappin, who once in a while, you'll just learn so much from this guy. About once or twice a year, I get a chance to spend time with him. And he's always just a fountain of information and wisdom that I asked him to come and do a podcast. This weekend, it's going to be Rabbi Lappin. We talk about socialism. We talk about what's coming with the country. We talk a little bit about history. And the most basic of human questions, who are we? Listen.
The Bible is not man's book about God. If it was, we'd talk about the creation of the universe. Mm-hmm. It's God's book about man. Mm. And fundamental to that is this basic question of what are we? Mm-hmm. Are we nothing but a creature on the continuum that starts with bacteria and moves up to people? Or are we a completely different creature, as I say, touched by the finger of God? That's really what we have to ask ourselves, because everything flows out of that. Once we decide that question, and you can never know it, it's like everything else in life. When you get married to a woman, there is no way you can possibly know everything about her before you get married. That is a step you take with faith. When in almost every major decision in life, when you choose a career, you have no idea all the implications that's going to have 30 years later. And so similarly, on this decision, you also make a decision in your life. You say, look, there's two ways to live my life. I either have to live my life as if I am truly a purposeless collection of molecules of nitrogen and oxygen and phosphorus and carbon, or I am something that God created and put here with a purpose. And the implications are absolutely huge. And the kind of society, first of all, the kind of person I'm going to try and make myself become, the family I'm going to raise, the society I'm going to be part of, all of this is shaped, as I said earlier, by a belief along these lines as opposed to any facts.
Rabbi Lappin, the latest in our series of interviews with fascinating people, people that I don't necessarily agree with, some people I absolutely agree with, but each of them are people that I really want to talk to. Coming up in the next couple of weeks, we've got a guy who is, I think, the only survivor to ever jump off the Golden Gate Bridge. And his story is phenomenal. Mm. And he's now a motivational speaker trying to get people to understand, oh, I've been there. You know, he was kept alive by SEALs. Not, I mean, not like Navy SEALs, but like SEALs.
SEALs?
Sea lions. sea lions came up and held him up while the Coast Guard could get to him.
Oh, wow. That's going to be amazing.
Incredible.
A lot of deep conversations you've had on this podcast and a lot of really interesting things. Can I make a recommendation for another
one? Yes.
Do we have the short clip from this Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez interview we just did? I think you should talk to this guy because this is insight you're not going to hear anywhere
right.
else. Listen
Go ahead.
To this.
You know what's crazy? Like, she totally explained it, and I don't have $10 million, but even though I'm just like, nah.
So, you know what's crazy?
Yeah.
Like, she totally explained it, and I don't have $10 million, but even though I'm just like, nah. I mean, that's, you need to get this guy on. This is a huge, can we hear that one more time? That's amazing.
I'm not sure.
You know what's crazy? Like, she totally explained it, and I don't have $10 million, but even though I'm just like, nah.
Hmm. I got to get, we need bumper stickers printed with that on it. I mean, can you imagine? That is deep. One more time. That's really deep. Listen to that.
You know what's crazy? Like, she totally explained it, and I don't have $10 million, but even though I'm just like, nah.
I don't,
think about it, guys.
I am. Mm-hmm. I really.
Yep, I bet you are.
I have no idea. Was he for or against?
I bet you are. I want you to sit back and think about that, America, today. Just think about that.
I mean,
because
he just explained it, and yet I'm still kind of like, nah.
You know what's crazy? Like, she totally explained it, and I don't have $10 million, but even though I'm just like, nah.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck program.
We go now to Bernie Sanders, who is joining us, I think. Are you in New Hampshire, sir?
I'm in Vermont.
And you're
Vermont is the people's New Hampshire.
Right.
New Hampshire's the 1% of Vermont. I would never step foot in New Hampshire until the primaries.
Okay. Well, welcome to the program.
Thank you. It's good to be here. I would like to say hello to you and to your listeners, specifically the ones who make less than $47,000 a year. Those are the hardworking Americans that I'm here to represent. Thank you, Glenn.
Yeah. Well, what about the other people that are, you know, making 50, 55, even 100,000?
Oh, you mean the Rockefellers of the United States that are sucking wealth out of the middle class, the hardworking middle class that's composed of people that work in coal mines and chimney sweeps? I've nothing to say to those people.
Yeah. So, what exactly is why do you think you've connected to the people so dramatically now?
I think we're finally awaking as a country that wealth is entirely dependent upon theft, and they're understanding that the way to handle it is to either take the money of rich people or potentially break them into smaller organs and pieces and redistribute them to the masses. And I am the only person that wants to actually take blood out of Jeff Bezos and resupply it to other more hardworking people.
You actually want his blood?
Yes.
Yeah.
That way, at that point, because you have access to the bank account if you have blood. Not a lot of people know that. But there was a law in the 70s that if you get somebody else's blood, you have some recourse to their checking account.
I don't think that's true, sir. Now, some of the proposals that you're making are, I mean, they sound like the former Soviet Union.
I will acknowledge they are robust proposals to try and save the United States from descending back into a plutocratic hellhole where aristocrats with top hats are beating coal orphans with whips for their amusement. Yes, Glenn, if that's what you mean.
People haven't worn top hats for a very long time, around the time of Abraham Lincoln, I believe.
And that is entirely due to the New Deal of FDR. If it weren't for FDR, there would be top hats everywhere and coal orphans living in caves.
So you're for the Green New Deal, I suppose.
I had a lot of problems with it, as I imagine you did. I thought it was fairly anemic. And very tiny in its scope. I thought it could have been 3-4 times more robust than it was. And when I'm elected president, I will make a hyper neon green deal that's new.
A hyper...
hyper neon new green deal.
Okay. And what's in that hyper new green deal?
Thank you, Glenn. I appreciate that. I know you and I don't always see eye to eye.
Yeah,
however, I appreciate being able to spell out the policies. These are important to the working people of the United States.
It's okay.
The number one thing, Glenn, is Medicare for all. Now, I know what you're going to say, Glenn. You're going to say, how can the United States afford to pay for Medicare for all of the people of the entire planet Earth? And I tell you, we have enough money to do that, and it is unconscionable.
Wait a minute.
That the wealthiest country in the history of the world can't give health care to everyone on Earth.
So you want Medicare for all, for everybody.
For everyone on Earth, and if there are other planets that have life, we will also give it to them. But right now, everyone on Earth.
Okay. So do we have borders in your world?
Yes, we do. We do have borders because you have to be aware and conscious of rich people from other countries. You have to be able to stop them from coming in.
So you have borders around rich people.
Yes. Ideally, we would not let in anyone from the Cayman Islands or from Switzerland. Those two places are awful. And if we do not outright declare war on them, we should quarantine them.
Okay. All right. For instance, New York just rejected, Amazon. And they said, New York doesn't need, Amazon's jobs. We create thousands of jobs every month anyway. We're bigger than Amazon. And you killed 25,000 jobs.
Glenn, this is a fundamental misunderstanding of how the economy works. The economy naturally produces wealth. It comes up, it kind of bubbles out of the ground. Like, you're probably a proponent of trickle-down economics. I'm a proponent of dribble-up economics, like from a septic tank. It rises from the bottom, and it just naturally happens. And evil people take more than their fair share. So the job of the government is to allocate theft, which is what all commerce is, into smaller units that are more equally distributed. And the people of New York did that. They saw the benefit in having a type of leader who is a technocrat with a sweater vest and having them in charge of money. That is the future of mankind, Glenn.
All right. So, Bernie, there's been a lot of dirt that has come out on you. That essay that you wrote about how men have a fantasy of women on their knees, bound and gagged and beaten. That's their sexual fantasy. And women, they're fantasizing about being raped by three men at once.
Glenn, that essay was a long time ago. I believe that was 1973, which is also the last time I had sex.
Right.
I have not had any relations since that time. I believe I should be expunged due to the good behavior that I've had.
Of not having any sex.
None at all. None at all. Until everyone's having an equal amount, I refuse to engage in carnal relations with any Americans.
Right, okay. Are these things being, like the videotape of you praising, Castro's revolution? You still stand by that?
Castro was a great leader and a great man. He did a lot of, he brought universal education to the island of Cuba. He was a fanatic for cigars. Yeah, but they were also made by good working Cubans, and he was an excellent baseball player, which I myself am a fan of. I don't know if you know this. I'm originally from Brooklyn,
but
the Brooklyn Dodgers were there until capitalists stole them and sent them to Los Angeles.
Okay, but Castro himself was a killer. I mean,
Castro had a couple of details. All leaders have a couple of things that maybe are foibles that they have to deal with. I frequently am criticized on my fashion because I like to store the two suits that I own in a Pringles can. Does that detract from my excellent policy chops? I say no.
But having a crumpled suit and killing, hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people, I wouldn't compare them.
I think the issue, Glenn, is we're trying to make a better, more just, more equitable society. Occasionally, people might die, but they will die less than in a capitalist system, which is based on making a puree out of workers and then giving it to cows to feed them, and then we eat the cows, and that creates gases. There's all sorts of cycles that I don't think you're acknowledging in the capitalist system.
Some might say that you're crazy, Bernie.
I am crazy, like FDR was crazy. I'm crazy for justice, crazy for equality. Does that make me crazy, Glenn? I say no.
Okay. All right. We'll just one more quick question. You've come out against Howard Schultz.
Yes.
Because he's wealthy.
Yes.
But you said to run as an independent is horrible. You are an independent.
I am an independent strategically when it suits the ambitions of me and the working class people. Howard Schultz is a billionaire. Every billionaire is a policy disaster in the United States. I think his money should be taken and every Starbucks should be converted into some sort of organic farming facility for iceberg lettuce, not for kale. Kale is the top 1% of vegetables. It's just for iceberg lettuce.
All right. So you're for the Democratic Party. All the rifts between you two have healed. There's nothing but love with you and the Democratic Party.
I am a strong proponent of the Democratic Party. I am enjoying the Democratic Party. I'm proposing legislation actively that we should all legally be friends. And I believe once that's passed that we will usher in a new utopia.
All right. And just if anybody wants to pitch in on your campaign, what do you recommend?
You can go to my website, BernieSandersTwoSuitsAndACrumpledPringlesCan.org. The other ones were already taken, unfortunately, but that one was still available.
Right. Okay.
And you can go there and donate on my Patreon account, and I'm trying to crowdfund a new state in between Massachusetts and New Hampshire.
A new state?
Yes, it's going to be Vermont, too. And it will be Vermont, only slightly better. So there's a lot of projects to get involved in. The main one is to get me elected president. I think I'm going to pull it off this time. If I don't, I'm going to keep doing it at least to 2040.
All right. Thank you very much, Bernie Sanders, for being a part of the program.
My pleasure. Thank you, Glenn.
Thank you.
I do like that he's honest. You know, he doesn't
mind.
The
Vermont, too, I think we should explore next time, because I don't know. I've seen Vermont, you know, Vermont 1. I don't know how you'd make it better.
Can you have too many Vermonts?
I don't think so.
This is the Best of the Glenn Beck Program.
Jonathan Dunn is known as Freedom's Disciple. He does a podcast on The Blaze. He is from Ireland. He so desperately wants to live here in the United States, but, you know, getting a visa here is ridiculously difficult. And so he is in Ireland, and he comes in to visit from time to time, and then he speaks around the country about America and what makes us, I love this, not what makes America great, but what makes us exceptional. Welcome to the program from Ireland, Jonathan Dunn.
Thank you, sir. Awesome to be here.
Yeah, it's good to have you here. You're at home in America, aren't you?
Yes. Yeah. It's where I feel comfortable. I when I come over here, I'm saying I'm going home. Monday when I fly back, I'm back to Ireland, and it's the way it is. It's life.
It must be hard for you because I can't imagine America. There's not a lot of people that are there in Ireland who are like, you know what, America's really got it all.
No.
Yeah.
Right. But the thing is, the frustrating thing and why I do what I do is there's not many Americans today who can actually tell you why it's an exceptional nation. I talk to many people on all sides and I get, America's great because we're Americans.
Mm-hmm.
No. You're great because you're a set of values and principles. You know, I was very blessed. I've shared this story with you, and you know this well, is when I came over first as a 7-8-year-old boy, I went to Clearwater, Florida, to my grandaunt. Mm-hmm. I fell in love with your country. Then I fell in love with your people because you're awesome, you're open-minded, you're inspiration, you're always looking forward, you've got this can-do attitude. Then with the internet and learning from people like you and Mark Levin, I fell in love with America, the idea. It's the idea that makes you exceptional. When I hear people on all sides of the aisle say, you need to be more like Europe, you need to be like everyone else. No. We need to be more like you, not because you're Americans, but because of certain ideals. The right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. The right that you have the right to pursue your happiness. You can do anything you want. Doesn't matter because of your race, your class, your background, your education, your parents.
People don't see the difference between you. I mean, they would think Scotland, Ireland, England. I mean, I can go over there and be whoever I want to be. Why can't you be there that over there?
Because there's no incentive to be. So people, let me break that down into certain policies that you need to be aware of. So everyone now, you're running for 2020 and you're talking about progressive tax codes and it's about the millionaires and the billionaires. The problem with that is it might start there, but eventually it attacks the average Joe, the middle class person.
Mm-hmm.
Let me give you some stats about Ireland. Ireland is a proud progressive nation with a proud progressive tax code. Every cent everyone earns over €32,000, which is ballpark with exchange rates, about $34,000, is taxed at 40%.
Oh my gosh.
Why would you work? Why would you do the incentive? My mother is over 60 and she made some changes in her life a couple of years ago and she worked 5 days a week all her life and she was on decent money for what she did. I sat her down and she was like, I need to do a little bit less and I need to just want to do different things. I want to live a bit more. I sat down and I did her numbers and said, if you do a 3.5-day week or a 3-day week, you'd only lose like $100. And she was like, but that's 2 days less work. How is that working? Because I brought her right under the €32,000. She saved so much money. She was effectively spending two of her days effectively working for the government, putting herself through that hassle. If you have that incentive or lack of incentive, why work hard? Why come in early? Why want a bonus? But that's only for a worker. When you're innovating, why would you want to do it? Why would you want to work and give 40% of income tax to the government? That's income tax. Then we have PRSI. Then we have a USC.
It goes up to nearly 50. What are those?
So it's pay-related social insurance. And then there's a USC, which is a social charge, which all supposedly goes into the healthcare. But we are like a government like you all, where it's supposed to go into these different funds, but it doesn't. It goes into one big pot, and then everyone just takes out of it what you will.
So you are up to 50, but that's pretty much, I mean, Bill O'Reilly talked about it today, 50% of his paycheck. because he lives in New York, goes to taxes. About 46 or 47% of my paycheck goes to taxes. So we're doing that. It's just on the rich
yes.
that's happening.
Mm-hmm.
You think the difference is the it's rich had a down. Chance to get there.
Yeah.
The reason the frustrating thing for me is about socialism and about big government is you have to understand, when I hear Bernie Sanders and some of the socialists speak, they're usually right on the problem. It's the solution they fall down on.
Mm-hmm.
The reason that free market capitalism is the answer is because it creates the same level playing field for everyone. These big businesses that lobby government and use these policies and use these regulations and tax policies, they've made their money. They can pay the 40% tax.
Mm-hmm.
Other people don't. It's why America is the exception. If we go back to your history, you study the history of the world and pretty much every revolution, you're the exact opposite. Because usually revolutions, and you're seeing this in France right now with the yellow vest mm-hmm. protest, they're the people at the bottom of society, and I mean this not from a class or not from a standard, from an income point of view, with nothing to gain and everything to lose, wanting their slice of the pie. Your founders were the exact opposite. If I use modern day language, your 54 signers of the Declaration of Independence were the bourgeoisie, were the greedy capitalists, the millionaires and billionaires of the day. If they wanted to, they probably could have gone to the king and said, hey, listen, king, we're all these people. We are all these people with status, with money, with not well known, with land, with property, with businesses. Give us a better deal and just screw the average American. They didn't. They fought for freedom for everyone.
I have studied the founders so many times, and I've never looked at it that way. That is a great observation.
They had everything to lose. That is why they're incredible. But let's go even one step further. The frustrating thing for me is because you're using certain words in your culture right now, and one of them is winning. Everyone on my friends on the left, my friends on the right, they say, I just want to win. America was never about winning. Let's go into some of the stories about winning, shall we? Your 54 signers of your Declaration of Independence. One was a judge from New York. This is very rare for today. He was respected by both sides of the aisle as a fair judge. After he signed the Declaration of Independence, how many cases did he hear? Zero. Why? Because it wasn't about winning. It was about doing the right thing. Other people who signed your Declaration of Independence lost their property, lost their stature, lost their fame, had their wives, their mothers, their sisters raped. What was winning like to them? But then you go into the Revolutionary War, the people who fought, who went and actually went into battle, who lost their brothers, who had no shoes, who hadn't got guns, who hadn't got the right training. What did winning look like to them? America was not built on a great idea of winning. If you want to win, study the French Revolution, because that's all they wanted. They wanted to get their bit of power and win and compel the other side, and that ended with the guillotine. America was built on the premise of doing the right thing. It's why you had divine providence. If you get that and you understand it's not about winning, you have to do the right thing. And your answers are in your Constitution, are in the Bill of Rights. And if we have these conversations, you win. Can I share an example with you of someone I had a conversation with mm-hmm. this week? Someone went, John, I hear you talk about government and stuff, you know, but Bernie Sanders, you have to admit money in politics is a problem. And I went, I absolutely agree with you. Money in politics is a problem. Lobbying is a problem. He went, how do you fix it? And I went, why don't you tell me how you fix it? You're a Bernie Sanders supporter. How do you do it? He's like, well, campaign finance law. I said, no, the answer is the Constitution. What's in that document that fixes that? Article 1, Section 8. 18 clauses are there of what the federal government can do. Everything else is left to the states. I know you've said you believe this, you share this. If you follow that, everything else has got to go to the states. You don't have lobbyists in Washington. You come to Texas, you come to Austin, you come to New York, you come to Chicago. But even states like Texas, y'all meet, what, 2 months every 2 years?
Mm-hmm.
So for 22 months of the year, lobbyists can't do anything in Texas. Then you encourage that to go elsewhere. That's how you solve these problems. The Constitution. The sad thing about your country right now, and you've come so far off your government, your founder said there's 18 things the federal government can do. Everything else is to the states. Here's the sad truth about your country. Can you name 18 things the federal government won't do?
No.
Can you name one? They tell you what toilet you can go to. They tell you what cars you can drive. They tell you what mortgage you can have. They can tell you how much income you have. They tell you what sweets you're allowed. They tell you what medicine you have. Name one thing the federal government cannot do in your life. Because here's where the difference is. America's founders are so exceptional. They said, your rights come from your creator, and there's limits on government. Why I'm terrified that no one addresses this problem. You want to know the real battle of the day? It's not Donald Trump. It's not Democrats. It's not Republicans. The battle of the day that we need to start explaining to people, it's not even liberty versus tyranny. It's the law of man versus the law of nature. You're exceptional for a fact. Because every other nation, whether it's a king, a dictator, a monarch, an oligarch, a theocracy, any of them are all based on the law of man. There's no foundation. It changes with popular opinion and with elections, wave elections. Yours, founder, said, no. We're going to base it off the laws of nature's law and nature's God, because there's principles. They were true 240 years ago. They're true today. And they will be true 250 years from now.
It is why socialism doesn't work, because it takes away and is in the face of the law of nature.
Yeah.
It says that men are not animals, and that somehow or another we can equalize everything and make everybody the same. It's in nature, nothing is the same. All the lions are not even equal. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
But you want that. We want difference of opinion. You know, we want people to do different things. Because here's the key word that you need to emphasize in your Declaration of Independence. You have a right to pursue your happiness. You're not guaranteed happiness, but you have the right to pursue it. It's about the individual. We all have different things. If you want to go be set up the blaze, which you did, and you wanted to have this empire to stand and be a beacon for truth, go for it. If you
couldn't do this in Ireland?
No, absolutely not. Not a hope in hell. But also there's no market for it. That's the reason you have a difference. So people say to me, what's the difference between Ireland and America and the rest of the world? You have a beacon. You're not using it right now, but you have a roadmap to success. We don't have that. We don't have nature's law. We don't have a fundamental belief we're all created equal. We have a class system. That's how I got my show. I don't know if you remember. I rang in. You were annoying me 1 week. I said, Dan, please stop using the word middle class. It goes against the founding of a principle of America. Because if you have you're Glenn, you're upper class. Stu, you're middle and I'm lower. But yeah, we're all fundamentally created equal. Mm-hmm. How does that work? Mm-hmm. You can't have it. They're oil and water.
I'm much more upper class than either of you.
I'm the lower class of it all, because we're basing it on income. But the idea that you have that idea, if you want to go be a baseball star and earn like Manny Machado, I'll give you a baseball record. Yeah. If you want to be Manny Machado and you want to sign a 10-year, $300 million deal, go for it. If you're like me and who happens to like to speaking and I want to do that for free, go for it. It all goes to your pursuit of happiness. If you want to set up a business, or if you want to be a stay-at-home mom, because that's popular to attack today. If that's your dream in life, go for it. It fundamentally comes back to you're an individual and you can do whatever it is you want. You have one opportunity in life, and we need to encourage people. Because here's the cultural difference between America and the rest of the world. Every other country pulls people down. There's a saying, I'm sure you may have heard it, you're getting too big for your britches. Mm-hmm. Or you can't do that. You got a bit successful, then you're now rich. You have all these things. You have your big car, new car. You have all this money. You're worth all these millions. I Googled you. I see how much money you're worth. You're too big. You need to pay more. America was about, you know what? Go for it. Why don't you do it yourself? You can do it. There's nothing stopping you. It's all up here in the mindset. So many people have become a victim of, I could never do that. Why could I do? I don't come from the right class. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. It's all in your mind. Dream big.
You were here a couple of years ago. We have about a minute and a half left. Tell me what, if anything, is different since the last time you were here.
Well, the good news to report is I've been around a lot of Texas and Oklahoma and St. Louis. Your people are still awesome. It hasn't, the way you treat each other online hasn't infiltrated how you treat people on the street, which, thank God, touch wood, it never does. You're still open. There's no racial issues. I've had conversations with black people, white people, gay people, straight people. There is nothing there. The biggest thing I've learned is there's an appetite for founding principles, because everyone right now, they might admit it because of their politics, are going, things aren't making sense right now. What we need to do, if you want to go big and you want to actually make America exceptional again, now is the time to make the case for your founding principles. You have to understand the Declaration of Independence and make the case, not about the Republicans or the Democrats or left versus right, make the case for principles. Because here's the thing, people say to me, can America prosper again? Can America be exceptional again? That's not the question. The question is, yes, you can. The question is, do you want to? The question is, are you willing to go through the pain and sacrifice that your founders went through to get it?
This is why we gave him a show on The Blaze. It's a podcast. You can listen to it. Freedom's Disciple, Jonathan Dunn. I urge you to seek that podcast out and listen to him and support him. And one day I hope to welcome him as an American to our shores.
This year you will.
Jonathan, thank you so much.
The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.